Hi, guys. Welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool. Yes.
Sean gets the applause.
Thank you.
Today, we are going to be talking about something going on this weekend, Sean, I believe. I think it's a soccer match.
Big soccer match. Or is it hockey? Maybe it's hockey.
There we go. Yeah. Our buddy Tim Davis would love that.
If the
Preds were playing, that is. But
As we're recording this, it's Super Bowl weekend. So I kind of made a little bit of a tradition about talking about advertising around the Super Bowl and all that. But we're kind of getting a jump on it this year. Usually we do a kind of after Super Bowl review.
That's right.
So we're kind of doing a pre-Super Bowl review and looking at like a pretty interesting trend that's happening this year that really I think it's a big difference from the way you're going to experience Super Bowl ads, or some people will. I don't know that it's going to make any difference for me what we're going to talk about, but I was reading through the article you sent me and I'm like, man, this seems like a lot of work to.
Yeah.
So, and we're also going to have a guest.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. We
big
have
a time guest. I mean, like, at least the company they work for is kind of big time.
Yeah, we have Laura Tarbox. She is a brand strategist with Ogilvy. So,
stepping up in the world.
Yeah. So Ogilvy, founded by David Ogilvy, who we've mentioned a number of times back in I think back in the 1940s, right? So,
He was around. I think after that, he was working well into the 70s, I think.
Yeah.
So,
okay. So several
books on the row of the shelf behind me. So from Ogilvy. Yeah. If you listen to this podcast, and you've not read Ogilvy on advertising at least two or three times, like you're missing out.
Right.
Like, it's just one of those books. I still use it. I've got it dog eared and marked, and especially if I'm ever called on to do like space ads or things like that, that book is just full of great examples.
Yeah.
That still work to this day too.
Yeah.
I think we reviewed
that book on a past podcast. It'd be cool to every now and then just go back to that. It's just such a classic.
So yeah, that'd be good. It's there's lots of good takeaways in that book for sure.
Yep.
So, well, I'm excited. Yeah, I'm excited about that. We'll be talking about is social media and how that's kind of changing the game in advertising around the Super Bowl and really in general. Especially around big events.
So the big question is this the end of advertising for the big brands, right? Who is, we've got Budweiser opting out. We've got a number of other brands that have said
Coca-Cola's opting out.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
should be part of that's like, or they're trying to, judge the times part of it. You know, so it's interesting to see kind of how that shakes out. And then there's some newcomers coming on too. So
sure.
Yeah. Interesting. But before we go down too far down that road, we've got some beverages to discuss and partake of. And I'm excited about the one I've got. Picked it up here at the local, or at least Texas local. It's from Texas.
This is not part of the Craft Brew Club, although we will throw them up a little sponsorship ad there.
Yeah. It's beer, and it is craft beer. This is not one from the Craft Beer Club. Could be. Mm-hmm. Fit right in. This is from Lakewood Brewing up in Garland, Texas. And it's called, kind of where King of the Hill is. That's the town that it's kind of.
I thought that name sounded familiar. That is from. Yes.
King of the Hill is Arlen, Texas.
Arlen,
They left off the G, but that's what it's modeled after, from my understanding.
Right.
So this is Temptress Imperial Milk Stout. Got the like the trucker mud flap.
Yeah, I was logo. Gonna. That was the first visual that comes to mind is the trucker mud flaps.
Yeah. So this is a 9.1% ABV. Says Temptress is seduction in a glass. This imperial milk stout pours with a thick milk chocolate head, opens up with sweet caramel aromas, and a warm complexity that grows deeper with every sip. We love it, and the fans agree. Temptress is the number one craft stout brewed in Texas. Pairs well, I like this too. It says pairs well with robust blue cheese, dark chocolate, and sin. There you go. Pairs well with sin. That's all I need to know, I guess.
Robust blue cheese, dark chocolate, and sin. Okay.
Yeah. Not necessarily all together. Like it all. I think the blue cheese kind of on its own, but the dark chocolate and sin, blue cheese and sin, I think that, you know, that's probably a match. But
sounds super interesting. Dark.
Yeah.
Super. So what is the, give us a little IBUs, ABV, all that good stuff.
Yeah. So the ABV is 9.1. The IBUs are actually fairly high, 56. Mm-hmm. Best served at 50 to 55 degrees, which our longtime listeners know that because we did trivia on that one.
Oh,
time.
Yeah.
So yeah, 50 to 55. So I've had it sitting out a little bit.
Good.
From the fridge. Yep. But yeah, look at that nice
man, pour. That's dark.
So yeah.
All right.
Smells like an imperial stout. So what you got over there in Tennessee land, volunteer land?
So I have a, let me hold it up here. Here we go. A V latte from Bearded Iris Brewing Company. Have we ever had a Bearded Iris Brewing?
No, that's the first. I like okay. that. Bearded Iris, yeah.
Bearded Iris.
So is that like the plant, like the flower iris, or like the part of your eye that's bearded? Like, I don't know what's bearded here. I'm a little confused about what is bearded.
Well, let's give a little description. Maybe we'll figure it out. Let's see. It's an oated imperial stout with cocoa nibs, vanilla bean, lactose, Blue Heron, a fruity, bright espresso blend courtesy of our friends at Crema Coffee. So okay.
Little cross branding.
Yeah. Little cross branding. Imperial, Imperial oatmeal stout. It's 9.4% ABV.
Ooh, got two strong ones on the show today. No telling what's going to happen today,
but some espresso mixed in. So
yeah,
it may balance things out a little.
Yeah. We'll see.
All right, pop this. I got to see what this looks like. I'm guessing it's going to be dark
and
frothy. Oh, not too frothy. Look at this. Got to flip over and hold the camera up.
There you go.
But it is dark.
Yeah, that's definitely dark. So, like that Guinness glass, though. Nice.
Yeah, I broke my last Chattabrucci. I had two of those. Remember those? The Chattabrucci glasses. It busted in the sink last week. Oh. So I got to get me another set.
Yeah.
All
maybe
right.
Heading back down there at some point in the future.
Absolutely.
Maybe.
Love that place. All right.
Cheers. Cheers.
Oh,
good.
That is excellent.
Yeah. Mine's good too. I taste almost like it's weird. I almost taste like a little cherry.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't mention that. So cherry. I don't know. Yeah, it felt like a little bit of a, just a very light a
little citrus, cherry. Like a little fruity taste there.
Yeah, almost like a little cordial, cherry cordial type taste to it. Not sure if that's just me. Maybe that was the leftover cinnamon bread kicking in.
All right, yeah, give it a second. Give it a second go around, just to make sure.
I mean, either way, it's like really good. It's like, this is what I expect when I go for a milk stout, imperial milk stout. Like this is what I expect. You know, it's like, it's rich, but it's not too rich. Mm-hmm. It's not over the top rich. I'll go ahead and rate mine. I'm going to give this like a 4.8.
Wow.
This is definitely one of my highest. Yeah, it's good.
4.8. That's strong.
I have been tempted by the Temptress.
Yeah, I think that can had a little to do with it there, buddy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to follow right behind you and give mine a 4.8 as well. So this is really good. It's I like any any stout that's got the espresso, the mix of espresso in it. So I think that gives it a nice balance. So it's, you know, sometimes you can get too sweet on these imperial stouts, but you add a little espresso in there and that kind of helps to balance things out a little. So I like this one a lot.
When I was there in Knoxville, I mean, Honey Bee Cafe over in Farragut, like that's one thing I love. Like you could, they had craft beer, had just some craft beers on tap.
Yep.
And they were obviously a coffee shop. So you could get your craft brew and then they would put a fresh espresso shot in it or like, you know, cold brew. Actually, they do a cold brew shot. And it was just like perfect. Yep. I mean, they just fresh pour, just really nice. So I like that too.
Good stuff.
All righty.
Just to give it a little preview. So we're going to be talking about, well, on this episode, we're going to be talking about some of the smaller companies that are advertising, how social media and social media advertising is being incorporated. Some pretty creative stuff because you're seeing a lot of that. You know, we talked, what did we talk a couple of weeks ago about gamification, and some of these companies are using that in their advertising to keep, to push people over to, you know, social media to get them engaged with some games, some events, some things that they can take part in. I think that's really,
And I'm curious, like, you know, is this a trend as people get more connected, or is this a generational trend? Like what, you know, what are they going, what are the advertisers here going after? Are they just taking advantage of the technology, or are they actually trying to go after a younger market who will be using these tools?
Sure.
Cause I gotta be honest. I mean, some of the stuff we're going to talk about, I don't see myself participating, you know, showing my age here, but like, I just want to watch the game. Whatever comes on is fine. But I just maybe get a little Twitter banter here and there, you know, but a lot of this stuff, I mean, to me feels almost like work, you know, it's like Snapchat filters and like, man, you gotta, it feels like a lot of extras. Like I like what happened to the days when I could just be a passive consumer, like just in, now I got to do stuff, right?
Yeah. Which is exactly the total opposite of what you want to do during a Super Bowl. Yeah. You're just kicking back.
But I get it. Like they're trying to make it more interactive, get you engaged with the brand. So I totally get that. Like you said, some gamification.
Sure.
And I think our guest is probably a good bit younger than us. So she'll have some, she'll represent that crowd.
Right.
And see what's going on. But yeah, it's, you know, we're looking at brands like, you know, Cheetos has a huge campaign that they're doing. And they're, you know, they're kind of doing both, right? They're double dipping. They're doing the commercial and then using social media with it, which I think is kind of the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be that hybrid effect. And we'll get into a little bit more detail about what they're doing. So we'll be talking about the big brands like Cheetos and Nike and what they're doing, and
Pepsi, Mountain Dew, doing the Mountain Dew, featuring John Cena.
Yeah. He's been quite the commercial hit guy for a while. I mean, he's doing some crazy commercial. Like he doesn't do anything just like straight up commercial. It's like weird stuff that he tends to be doing. Right. Verizon's doing some cool stuff. Mm-hmm. They've got kind of a whole little ecosystem they've built just for this, literally just for the Super Bowl.
Yep.
With their own little virtual stadium. Same with Avocados from Mexico. So it's really interesting to see how they're taking advantage of the event without buying time.
Sure.
On the event.
Yeah.
You know, network on CBS or you know, whatever it's on this year. So I think that's interesting how they're doing that.
Yep. All right. So our guest has joined us. She is in the green room and I am going to bring up Laura. Let's see here. Hi, Laura.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. So we had introduced you before on the show before we got into, cause Sean and I were talking about our drinks and we mentioned, I want to make sure I pronounce your name correctly. Is it Tarbucks?
It is.
Okay. So that's an interesting name. I've never
always phonetic. Phonetic is the key.
Okay. All right. So I botched some of these sometimes. It's terrible. Yeah.
Well, you forgot. So you forgot to give her the applause.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Our guests always get the applause.
There you go.
Thanks.
Especially when you work for Ogilvy. You got to get maybe a double applause for that.
Yeah, there you go.
I'll take it. I'll take it.
Yeah, that's one of our, David Ogilvy's one of our kind of heroes on this show. Mm-hmm. You know, talk about persuasion and my copywriting background. Like, so, you know, his books are back here, yep. You know, Ogilvy on Advertising, Confessions of an Ad Man, all those books. So, and then even, the new kid on the block with Ogilvy, probably somewhere down there, Rory, is that it?
Yep.
Yep.
Rory right. Sutherland.
Sutherland. Yeah. That's what I wanted to say. McIlroy. I was like, no, that's the golfer. Different Rory. Rory, that's a fantastic book too. Alchemy. And I've enjoyed watching a lot of his YouTube things and podcasts. So,
absolutely.
So we're expecting big things from you.
No, absolutely. No pressure.
Your accent, you sound like you're from South Georgia or South Texas, right?
I know. It's uncanny. New London. It's New London.
Okay. Cool.
In London. So where is that for us Americans that do not know European geography or UK?
I'm from a town about an hour north of the capital of the UK, well, of England, London. Yeah. Okay. But I live in and work in New York.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So do people over in New England or not New England? England, do people over there get excited about the Super Bowl? Do you know people in the UK, do they tune into it? Or is it mostly they're like, I'd rather watch a soccer game?
That's a great question. And I would say that over the past 10 years, it's probably changed. So when I was living in the UK, well, I've been in New York for 6 years now, but let's say 10 years ago, I had one friend that I knew that would stay up and watch the Super Bowl. He was really into American football. Mm-hmm. But to be honest, it wasn't that widespread. But I would say, I guess like the kind of globalization of everything and, you know, like social media and all of that stuff makes it more of an event. It's not something that people are necessarily going to stay up and watch, but I think people definitely like track the ads. Sure. I mean, especially in our industry, like in every country. Particularly like Western markets. I think it's become something more of a phenomenon, but it's definitely not something that everyone's gathering around the TV set to watch.
Well, that's true, because it'd be what, 11 o'clock at night, midnight when it comes on?
Yeah. And this thing goes on a long time, you know, they like to pad it out. So
yeah, it's like, it's like 1 a.m. before you get to the halftime show, right?
I mean,
it's like, oh man, that's what people are waiting for is the halftime show.
Yeah.
That would be rough. I could see how that'd be rough over the UK. So,
I mean, the other thing I would say is that I mean, it's interesting given the most recent election, a lot of my friends in the UK were actually the ones texting me about that and were paying very close attention to it. So I do think the other thing is that there's an upward trend in the interest, I guess, of America for Brits. And I think that is down to good and bad reasons.
Yeah, sure.
Like anything, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Hey, you love us or hate us, but don't ignore us type thing. So
Laura, you're a brand strategy expert with Ogilvy. Why don't you, before we get into our topic, which is the Super Bowl, give us a little background on yourself. Tell us exactly what you do as a brand strategist.
Yeah. So currently I work at Ogilvy in their planning team. And my background's kind of in cultural and brand strategy. So historically using it's an academic methodology called semiotics, which is basically understanding what the things in culture mean in a really crude way of saying it. And that's in terms of the way they look, the way they sound, like who they're partnering with, et cetera. Everything conveys meaning. And semiotics helps decode that. And then cultural analysis more broadly, trend analysis, and then applying that to brands in terms of, okay, how do we position? Who might we partner with? What should we be talking about in communications? Bringing that cultural background to bear on what brands do in the world.
So I snooped on your LinkedIn a little bit. I'm getting some feedback, Jonathan. I don't know if it's just me or...
It wasn't snooping. I saw you.
But you got like an English lit major. So how did you go from that to marketing, advertising, cultural
Yeah. So in, actually, I would say that the English lit background has like a lot of overlap with kind of the that semiotics, cultural analysis, kind of academic side, because I guess in English literature, you're reading the subtext of a book, right, or a period of history. Right. And there's a kind of conceptual element of that. And semiotics is similar, but you're just reading the world. And in terms of kind of more broad branding and strategy and planning, I think in the UK, there's less reliance on kind of coming from a marketing degree or coming through ad school. And so I guess I kind of got lucky from coming, you know, the humanities is a pretty good track into that world. I think that's different in the US, but yeah, in the UK at least.
That makes sense because you've got sort of like the literature doesn't make sense without the context of the times.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like an artifact that is, has been, that has emerged from a whole set of things, you know, and sources and reference points and events.
Cool. So we're going to take all that knowledge and smarts and we're going to look at something that's very important, which is advertising and the big game, Super Bowl. And this, it seems like, this is what we've been leading up to for a while is the stuff that's happening this year with the crossover of TV space ad, you know, TV spaces and slots and merging that or either getting rid of that and going straight to social media.
Yeah.
So what are you seeing? Cause you're kind of, you get, you're in New York there, you catch your pulse, you know, your finger on the pulse of the industry. Mm-hmm. What are you seeing? We're going to talk about it, an article in Ad Age. But what are you seeing and do you feel the same way? Like this is a pivotal year for this, like it just feels different this year.
100%. And I think it's everything that we've gone through as a society and a world over the last year has like created a whole new paradigm for everything, but especially how ads are created and which brands get to say what they want to say on that stage in this moment. And I actually think what's so interesting about it is that for the first time, it feels like the rules for big brands and kind of smaller or more challenging challenger brands feel very different. I think the big brands are having a way harder time because this is the year that we've seen that vast inequality, like more broadly speaking, extreme suffering, this vast inequality between really the 1% and the rest laid bare. We can't unsee it. There's divisions everywhere. Obviously, it kind of, you know, that the match was lit to that stagnant stew, if you want to call it, and erupted last summer with all of the protests. And I think that's the context that we're living in. And, you know, I've been thinking a lot about the GameStop saga and, you know, everything that's been going on with the share price of that and what that tells us about the moment we're living in. And I actually think that we're living through this moment of power and the establishment kind of being renegotiated and kind of the establishment being challenged and those things being rewarded. So that might be, yeah, the vigilantes on Reddit that are pumping up the GameStop share price really to kind of do what Robin Hood should have done, right? And then the whole K-pop stan community doing what they were doing with their fan cams during the Black Lives Matter protests is all about moving and renegotiating that power away from the establishment and challenging that. And so if you think about these big brands as kind of symbolic almost of the establishment and really of many of them profiting or almost feeling like symbols of profit at the expense of the everyday people, it just is like really creating a landscape in which they have to tread really carefully. And I think they're navigating that in kind of various ways. And for me, I think the brands that I'll be watching most closely are both the kind of first timers. So the little brands like Vroom or Mercari or DoorDash, for example, Fiverr, that are actually kind of stepping out onto the stage for the first time. And actually there's something super interesting about that dynamic of the littles stepping out onto the stage of the greats. That kind of power renegotiation is actually like part and parcel of that. And then also brands like, I don't know if you've seen the Squarespace 5 to 9 ad. It's great. It's basically a reworking of the Dolly Parton song 9 to 5, but also a kind of reworking of like that work-life ideology, and is basically all about turning the side hustle into the main hustle. So again, like challenging who gets power, basically, and what the establishment is and how it works. So I'm seeing that and I'm really interested in that. And then I guess some other things that feel really interesting are, if that's the kind of cultural context that we're existing in and big brands are actually having to navigate that in really yeah. navigate it. You know, we're, yes, sure. we're seeing these like mega corporates. So like Coca-Cola is stepping away entirely. And their statement was all about making sure that they're spending money in the right way. And I think that really is the only thing that they can do, because they represent, they're the establishment, right? Like Coca-Cola is like American capitalism. But we see some other brands that are like, okay, if we're going to show up, they almost are reconfiguring themselves as having to act as these civic entities. So like Verizon is, yes, it has a spot in the game, but it's doing all this stuff around it that's all about actually helping small businesses.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. Yeah. I mean, Verizon, I mean, they're creating their own little, you know, going, we're I'll be referencing an Ad Age article on Jonathan that you sent over and stuff, but they've literally created like their own online virtual world,
right?
Just for the Super Bowl. I mean, I can't imagine the hours and the expense and everything that went into that.
Yeah,
to create something like that, and then the campaigns around it, and the stars that are, you know, football stars that are around it, and all this stuff. And again, this is that kind of that example of like, yeah, we were all about the big game, you know, but then at the same time, we're going to be all online.
Yeah, I actually think it's. There's quite a few, like, I think that article's great that I read it, obviously. And I think that social media is playing two roles, isn't it, right now? And I think brands are, like, there's this element of kind of brands acting as entertainment hubs and like hubs to be social. And then, yeah, there's this element also of like interactivity. But I think that Verizon's a great example of that. It's kind of creating this experience to give people access to an element of sociability, which we're all going to be watching this on our own, right? Or with like one other person or with our immediate families. It's not like so much of the Super Bowl, at least in New York, like in my experience, is so social. It's all right. about like getting together and watching it in a group. And I think what's smart about a lot of the ways that some of these big brands and little brands are navigating it is actually by providing those experiences, being like experience providers, rather than just having this very one way broadcast in a $5 million spot.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good point. There's, you know, so much of successful marketing is, you know, like you talk about in just kind of what you do is, you have to be aware of what's going on culturally. You know, some of the best promotions that I've seen, you know, in my career, they're very time specific. Like they wouldn't have worked a year later. They wouldn't have worked a year before, but you know, in that time they were perfect. And I think that's, you know, that's the kind of stuff that, that we're seeing. They're trying to navigate this weird, you know, and I guess, I mean, you're kind of inside the bigger brands and, you know, than what we deal with. Like how far ahead do these companies have to start planning for something like this?
Like, especially this year, you know, you're talking like it's a good amount of months because especially this year, there's been so much testing and retesting and making sure like things are going to land. And I think even some of the smaller brands have been doing that, but a Verizon type object will have been having this in the works for a long, long time. Yeah.
It's because, I mean, I think because with so much like up in the air, like the election, like who's going to win, is the pandemic going to be over or not over? Like, it seems like that would be really hard for a lot of these brands to, and that's probably, I would guess why Coca-Cola is like, yeah, we're just going to sit this one out. Like, because we have no idea what's going on.
Yeah. Well, I think that, especially just thinking about a campaign I worked on around, like just before the election, we were definitely thinking about contingency, like scenarios almost of, okay, like what happens if we don't find out for however long, there's like a mass uprising, there's this, okay, well, we do this. Or what if basically the world's on fire, but not quite as on fire as the scenario one? Then, you know, so I imagine there will have doubtless been a lot of that.
Sure.
And, you know, a lot of these things are kind of testing and learning, like what things are resonating, and there will be iterations and like kind of tweaking up until the last minute. And in many ways, social media is where you get to do that kind of real time reaction and kind of very, very like in the moment, pop culture, zeitgeisty stuff. Mm-hmm. But totally everything is kind of either referencing or playing into the dynamics that have been created by the pandemic in everything they're doing, whether it's that aspect of sociability or whether it's, you know, there's an Indeed, the job site Indeed, it's referencing, like, not explicitly, but it's definitely like tapping into the fact that there's this mass unemployment and, yeah. You know, and even the Guinness ad is kind of talking about rising from the flames almost and being great in it. Sure. It's not talking necessarily about like specifically the pandemic, but we all know what it's talking about.
Right. So what is the biggest reason? I mean, a lot of these brands are backing out. I mean, does it have to do with 2020 and, you know, some of the, you know, I guess some of what's left over there, are they saying, mm-hmm. you know, it's really hard to walk a fine line and there's so much tension in our country and maybe we should just hold tight on this one? Or is there really another reason behind that? Does it have to do with just a financial decision to say, you know what, we're going to hold tight on this one this year?
I think it's a bit of everything and it depends on the specific brand, but I definitely think there's like a financial aspect, and not every company has kind of thrived as well during mm-hmm. the pandemic, like stuff, you know, stuff in the food and drink industry or things that are kind of more, you know, entertainment, things that are connected to the home. Of course, they've done much better than other industries. So I think there's a financial aspect to it, both externally and internally, in terms of like how our employees, have they had to take a pay cut, you know, a 20% pay cut to weather the storm? And if we put an ad in the Super Bowl, what does that mean from a PR perspective, you know, and just also, by the way, a human perspective? Sure. So there's definitely that. But I also think that some of these, like I said earlier, some of these big brands, they represent, I think they know they have to, you know, the brands such as kind of like, yeah, Coca-Cola or any of these very big corporates, mm-hmm. know that right now, the kind of landscape we're in and the fact that kind of there is all of this inequity, there's, you know, so many of these big companies have kind of been called out by, you know, Amazon, for example, for kind of taking rights away from workers, or, you know, think about the memes that people were posting about the stimulus checks they got. A lot of these big brands kind of represent the corporation or the establishment. And I do think that they're kind of just like, it looks crass for us to spend sure. that much money on a Super Bowl spot. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, many of them are just like, I'm out. And then others are pivoting to kind of be like, this is our civic duty. I think it's Budweiser is investing their money in a spot on vaccine awareness, mm-hmm. which of course is going to, you know, it's virtue signaling. They're going to get they are getting coverage on that. But it's just slightly darker arts, I suppose.
And the bigger the brand you are, I mean, just because, you know, we're the country split 50-50, right? On all these issues. So like, you can't take a stand either way. You're going to offend half your audience, mm-hmm. especially on a brand like Coke or Budweiser. You know, I mean, Budweiser may lean one way more than the other. Coke's probably fairly down the middle, I would think. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it would be really tough. Like you can't, I could see why they would sit it out. It'd be like, this is a no-win situation. Like, let's just give the money away. Like that's a lot of sense.
Yeah. I think like the Nike, for example, I don't think Nike's got a spot, but they're pivoting their spend to, I think it's like a football school for girls or something. And they'll be cooking up a storm about that on social media, and they'll have a social spot. But even they, who don't really shy away from like kind of partisan in inverted commas, like ideas, even they are kind of, there's like more criteria to navigate, I guess, this year. And also, by the way, you know, like social media, it's going to give you an outsized return than other years, because if mm-hmm. we're not at parties with our friends, we are, that second screen is Twitter or it's mm-hmm. TikTok. Like that actually is where the game is going to be taking place. And so in many ways, it's a smart investment also.
That's a great point. You're going to be, because there's going to be fewer people, you know, at a time watching, and it's going to be probably the people you've been stuck with forever mm-hmm. anyway. Right. So it's like, yeah, you're going to be more tuned into your second screen than you would if it was a big gathering with 25 or 30 people, half the people are eating chips, half the people are watching the game, like, mm-hmm. you know, all that. Yeah. So that's a good point that that second screen will be probably right there in their lap.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be, it will be the first screen. And I think that a lot of the brands that are acting as these, like, almost like entertainment hosts, you know, game show hosts. I feel like Cheetos is doing stuff like that. There's some other brands doing, because it John Cena, who's giving some like $1 million giveaway. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of genius. Yeah. But yeah, that kind of idea of creating this interactivity, sociability, but kind of making the event like your phone, you know, it's smart.
Yeah. And so let's kind of pivot to that. Is this a new trend moving forward I was telling Jonathan, I think before you came on, Lars, like, I'm like, I don't know, it feels like they're making me work to do their commercials. Like, it's like, you're probably too young to remember this. Sean's, it's like when lazy. You went,
he does.
Yeah. Like, I'm lazy and old. I'm getting old, starting to be a boomer or something. I don't know. Gen X, but not a boomer. But, it's like when you went from, Jonathan, you and I are old enough to remember, like, when there was people that pumped your gas for you, like, mm-hmm. that was just normal. Mm-hmm. And then self-serve, like, checkouts came in, self-serve pumps. And like, I feel like now all of a sudden, like, even advertisers are wanting me to do their work for them. Like, you know, take pictures of their video so that I can get a coupon basically for a free bag of Cheetos. Sure. Like, just send me the coupon. I'll just, you know, but
yeah,
I know that's probably more me than it is, but do you feel like that's the trend now? They're trying to be interactive and they're still figuring it out. Like,
I think that honestly, it kind of makes me laugh. The fact that what you described sounds shit. I wouldn't even want to do that. Do you know what I mean? That just sounds like it's like a kind of boring way to get I just go to the shop, you know, like that's how hard it's going to be. I think it's a mixture of both. I actually think the interactivity is like ramped up. I think, yes, that's a kind of, you know, that's a trend that you've seen with like advertising on social media, trying to drive engagement. Right. And so like one of the levers of that is this interactivity and kind of gamification in, which is like a bit of an outdated term or an old term now. But I also think this year it's playing a different role. And I do think that a lot of it will kind of have a bit more cut through because like I said, no one's around. We're watching this thing on the mm-hmm. first screen, which will become Twitter or TikTok or Instagram, whatever. But the other part of it is, you know, not everything's created equal. So the John Cena 1 million giveaway, I can imagine that doing extremely well. But it's two things. It's like, yes, interactivity is smart, especially this year, but also you have to be smart with how you kind of gamify that experience or how you actually engage people with that experience. If you feel turned off automatically by the idea of taking a picture of, I don't know, like a packet of crisps that you already have to upload it to get another packet of crisps, it might not be the best mechanic.
I think that like Cheetos, for instance, you know, they're leaking out or not leaking out. They're just telling people on their different platforms, like, hey, third quarter, you're going to take a picture of the ad, you know, with this app, this filter and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, it seems like work. I think it's a Snapchat. Yeah. Snap to steal. So
I think they have some fun stuff with the Cheetos social stuff. They have some fun stuff with Shaggy as well, though, right? Like the kind of sound effects. So stuff like that and like filters and all of that. And especially Shaggy. Actually, that's another thing that I'm seeing. Like nostalgia is alive and well. And I would say that Shaggy is definitely like one of those figures. Just as George from Seinfeld also is. And that is, I don't know if you've seen that spot. It's from Tide and it's pretty funny. But that as well has been this trend that we've seen across the pandemic of nostalgia and, you know, people almost self-soothing by whether it's like eating comfort food. And actually Cheetos is one of those brands or even people buying selling Amazon out of jigsaws, you know, all of that is kind of about nostalgia. And so it's not a surprise to me that people and brands, clients are tapping into like figures that represent that.
Yeah. Let's, you mentioned, Vroom, and I've been seeing their commercials a lot like this week leading up to it. Mm-hmm. Where there's a certain type of commercial that's starting to be popular, and you kind of hinted at it before, where it's kind of this anti-establishment type thing. Mm-hmm. You know, And their big thing is like, you can order from home. You don't have to go to a dealership, and they've been running those ads this week a lot. I've seen, I don't know if the Super Bowl one's going to be a little bit different, but talk about that. Like how these small companies, I think there's what, two or three, four small companies that are going to try to kind of steal the spotlight a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, this is kind of what I find really exciting. Cause I think it's, to me, I'm just like, these are the Reddit vigilantes of the Super Bowl to me. And I actually just before getting on, I watched, there's a teaser that Fiverr have also put out, and it's basically, they're going to partner with Four Seasons Total Landscaping, you know, where that, the conference was held, and the whole spot is basically, I think the caption is the end line is something around like the smalls like stepping out onto the big stage or something like that. They're even priming that kind of whole idea of these little guys like taking over the big stage and kind of, you know, David storming the stage of Goliath. And and I think it's, this year is one where even if people, consumers, viewers won't be able to articulate why they're kind of like excited about that, I think that it will be that idea of challenging the establishment and almost kind of turning the Super Bowl into a bit of a meme moment will be something that people are kind of energized by.
It could backfire on a company like Robinhood though, right? I mean, after the PR beating they took last week.
I find them advertising at the Super Bowl incredibly interesting. Yeah. And honestly, I watched the spot and I was kind of like, yeah, no. Because they're kind of playing, like their whole thing, yeah, to your point, their whole ethos is about, they've basically challenged in what they've done, their entire ethos, and yet they're still trying to play into that narrative with their spot. And people aren't stupid and people have had enough. And I think it's like bold, but not necessarily in a smart way for them to be showing up.
Sure. Yeah. I think that what happened with the GameStop, and I know it probably wasn't completely their decision. I mean, if you understand financial markets, like it was probably their clearinghouse that stopped it, not Robinhood itself, which if that was the case, they should have said that. I think that'd be one of the biggest PR flubs.
Right. Still though, perception's reality, and most people
you can't be a company called Robinhood and then not let the little guy win. That's sure. Just like, of all the companies that could have stopped, they were the absolute worst to do that. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Yeah, I was going to say, I might, I don't know if it's too late, but I might put the brakes on that ad after the week they had. Said, you know what? Maybe it's not a good time to run that, because it really, I mean, it's like even Ogilvy, what did he say? Bad, good marketing makes a bad product even fail even faster. So and not that they're a bad product. I'm sure it's a good platform, but I don't think you want to hype or promote yourself, right? Especially with the message. And I saw the commercial.
Yeah. It's timing. It's kind of cringy. Timing.
Yeah. It's like, whoa. Yeah.
I just think it's bad timing on so many levels. A, they're not, they're carrying on beating the same drum as if nothing's happened, which is silly. And then, you know, that dynamic we're talking about of this establishment and kind of little players kind of like exposing that at the Super Bowl. You're also then kind of one of the contributors to that going into the fray, just not reading the room. I don't know. So yeah, it's, I will be watching Twitter like a hawk when that one airs on my first screen.
They are going to get crucified.
Yeah. If they don't, I guess I'll just like fire myself and find a new career because I can't read anything. Sure. But yeah, I think they will be crucified. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's interesting too that I think the Super Bowl matchup lines up really well with this theme that we're talking about. And you've got the Patrick Mahomes, the new kid, you know, young kind of changing the game. And then you got Brady, who's the establishment, and although it's hard not to pull for him with the new team, because he's kind of done something that you shouldn't be able to do. So he's kind of doing the same thing in a new way. But still, it is this kind of established guy versus this new kid. It would have been better if he was still with the Patriots, but, you know, that would have been like the perfect. But I can see that thread going through as well.
Sure.
Every argument has nuance, Sean. I'm buying. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah. It's like a good metaphor, right? They always fall apart eventually if you work them too long.
There's a spot that is going to have Lil Nas X, which I'm sure you're familiar with his song Old Town Road. But there's a spot, and now I can't remember the brand, but that is using him as the face of exactly that message that, like, this is the line, the only way to create the future is to defy the logic of the past. It's from Logitech. So a nice little play on logic. But exactly that. It's kind of, it will be interesting to see if any writers after the event draw that parallel between the theme that we're seeing in the adverts and actually the dynamic on the pitch.
Yeah. Pitch would be field for our American
field. Listeners. Sorry, guys. the green square.
Square rectangle. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the only reason I know that is because I watched Ted Lasso on Apple TV. So like that was like part of the, I don't know. Have you seen that, Laura? Mm. That might be really fun for you to watch Ted Lasso. It's on Apple TV. It's a American football coach who goes to England to coach soccer.
Okay.
And he's got to learn all these new terms and like all this. It's really well done. It's a great show, great season. I think it's one or two seasons, but really good. But
I'll check it out.
That's one of the first things he asked is like he had to get all the naming and conventions straight. So yeah, it was good stuff. So the pitch is the field. All right. So Laura, what's your biggest takeaway and what do you think this is going to mean? A lot of our listeners are smaller businesses, a lot of solopreneurs, freelancers. These aren't $100 million companies. These are, under 1 million. A lot of, like I said, a lot of freelancers, solopreneurs, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. What can they take away from what we're seeing right now?
I think that, you're kind of positioned perfectly, like in terms of what we are seeing, as I've talked about this cultural context, which is kind of really creating this ethos almost of us getting behind the little guys, even during the pandemic, we've all been confined to our more immediate communities. And there's so much anecdotal evidence of people becoming much more invested in what happens to those local businesses that have shown such ingenuity in pivoting to, provide this instead of this or whatever it is. There's some research I was reading a while ago that was talking about how, like, some of the young people are kind of encouraging people to, when you go on Amazon, look at the shop front and look them up separately so you can buy from them directly and they get the full kind of whack of money. And so that ethos is something that is great for small businesses and actually is kind of positioning them as things that are easy to get behind or things that we're more willing to get behind in this kind of cultural moment. This is really about the little league, and I think that dynamic a lot of successful brands are going to talk into at the Super Bowl. But it should, hopefully that feels like power. That feels like a power and a strength that they can lean into. That's, in terms of their messaging, in terms of how they position, in terms of how they go after consumers. The economy and the recovery of the economy is going to depend on so many of these little brands. And I think people are more willing to see smaller businesses and little brands succeed after the year that we've had.
Absolutely. I would agree with that. I've been working from home as a, freelancer since like 2008, so I've been, Jonathan and I, we've been using Zoom for before it was popular and like, mm-hmm. All these things. So, but I think it's really interesting now that it was always hard to like crack a corporation because, like Zoom and freelance and like all this stuff was kind of just, you got to show up in office, you got to wear a suit and tie or, whatever. And now it's like t-shirts, whatever, like it's fine. Like it doesn't matter what your background is. Like everybody's, it just feels a lot more just authentic. Like if you can do the work, show up and do the work, it doesn't seem like there's as much positioning as there used to be. And I think that happened because a lot of the CEOs that had grown up in that world, had never used these technologies. And now they were forced to use them. They say, oh, wait, business didn't come to a halt just because people didn't come to an office. Mm-hmm. They're still productive at home, if not more. So I think that the solopreneur freelancer is definitely, you know, got a better chance to work with bigger and better companies than ever.
Yeah. I think as well, like, you know, that aspect of kind of doing, like, small businesses represent, I guess, three or four things right now that feel really timely. One, doing things differently than, you know, changing up the status quo, as we've talked about, like, that's really resonating. And that is something that's incredibly powerful. That authenticity, that kind of more grassroots, people who I know their names, you know, and I can see who works there and I can get behind them. And then that aspect of community also, that we are rooting for the businesses in our local community. We want to support them. We're actively supporting them over some of the big corporates. You know, there's a story of the Strand Bookshop in New York. I don't know if you would have heard about this, but it was essentially going to go under, and the owner put a kind of call out to for people to buy their Christmas presents in advance. The whole city rallied around that business. The business has been there for so many years. It's a small business, a single business, and they raised like 25 grand in a matter of hours, I believe. So that sentiment, like, tap into that sentiment, because it's on your side, more so than ever before.
Yeah, I think, and it's hard, right? Because the convenience of the big box stores, you can get two or three things, you know, a whole shopping cart full of stuff. You can get your a new rug for your dining room and the turkey to put on the table, like, at the same place, right?
Right.
So, I mean, the convenience, but I think people are seeing now that, like, maybe you do need to go separately to the guy who sells rugs and, you know, separately to the butcher shop and these things like that. And it's a better experience.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see if that sticks. You know, a lot of times these big events, these world events, like, pieces of it will always stick, and but then a lot of it kind of fades away over time. So it'll be interesting to see what happens this time with this kind of anti-establishment movement, how long it sticks. It'll be interesting to see that.
Well, I also think that, you know, not only do small businesses, yes, they're symbolic of doing things differently, but also find what you do differently that makes more sense for the consumer. So, you know, so many of these big companies have overheads that you either feel in the money you're paying them, or it takes longer, or whatever it is. Like, if you're a small business, you're doing something different that probably makes more sense. So tell people.
And you can move quicker. I mean, like you just said, these big brands, they have to go through committees to get things approved, you know, whether it's a marketing, you know, a advertising plan or campaign, you know, where the small business doesn't, you know, it's like guerrilla marketing all over again.
I think coming out of the pandemic, as things loosen up, which is hopefully, I know we thought it would be like forever ago, but like, I saw a great meme yesterday. It's like, when the pandemic's over is beginning to be like when Rihanna releases a new album.
Yeah.
I saw it. So like, when we do come out of that, I think high touch is going to be extremely valuable.
Sure.
Like, getting back to, like, know, like you said, Laura, knowing your name. Totally. When you said that, I thought of the old show Cheers, you know, where everybody knows your name. Cause we have to have an 80s reference on every show. So that's our 80s reference for the show. So like, yeah, I mean, that, I think that's going to be the small business superpower is like that high touch ability that big box just can't pull off.
Right.
Yeah. Totally. I actually, when you also said about this year, I mean, it's the year that just keeps, it's 2020, just keeping on trucking, yeah, I guess. But yeah, I think one of the spots that I was watching earlier, I think it's the Guinness ad, kind of talks about, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see how social goes off around this one spot. I'll be watching that as well, because it's all about kind of moving towards the light, essentially, and things improving. But it frames the year is kind of the great year, the best of the year that's still to come. And when I watched it, I just kind of felt that this, you know, we talked about 2021 as almost to be, I can't wait for 2020 to be over. 2021 was this beacon of hope that essentially came crashing down within approximately 4 days. Yeah. So I don't know, it'll be interesting to see how that sentiment lands. To me, it feels a bit
early.
Not tone deaf, but just a little bit like off off.
Yeah. Feels a little early to me. Like it's not clear that we're there yet.
Right.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're not there yet. And I guess it feels a little bit like brushing under the rug, you know, I don't know. So it'd be interesting to see how that lands.
So I'm curious, and we'll kind of wrap up on this, but so how do you, you know, in your job and what you do, so I've heard you say a couple of times, you're going to be watching this, you're going to be watching mm-hmm. Twitter. How do you track this stuff? How do you watch this stuff? Like, do you record everything and then go back and watch it for like, you know, do game film and like rewatch the commercial 40 times with groups and talk about it among your peers? Like, how do you analyze this so you know what to do next?
Well, I guess it depends. In terms of like myself, I will be paying attention to social media. I've been like reading about it because I just find it interesting. I'll be watching the spots and seeing what the industry press, like Campaign or Adweek or whatever, how they're written up, how the industry talks about the spots, as well as looking at how people talk about the spots. But as an agency, like, there will be, I'm sure we'll come together and probably view some of the great spots and the bloopers and like have a discussion about it. And then it usually is like, depending on the client, let's say it's an automotive client, we'll definitely be tracking stuff that, you know, rooms of the world. And in terms of the category, but also just like, okay, what are people talking about? How's this going to impact your industry or what people are thinking about when they're thinking about automotives? And it's usually on a client by client basis, like what's relevant and why, and let's kind of think about what we do differently next time.
That makes sense. Yeah. Yep. Man, some good stuff. Jonathan, you got any wrap up final questions or?
No, I just think that, you know, it reminds me, I was interviewing another, someone else on a different podcast earlier today. And he was, the topic was EQ, emotional quotient, and talking about empathy. And, you know, I think the brands that win are the ones that really do tap into empathy, you know, because understanding what, you know, entrepreneurs, what people are going through who have lost jobs, what businesses are going through who have been shut down, especially restaurant owners. You know, I think that is the key. And if you can tap into that, not from a manipulative standpoint, but from just an honest understanding of what people are going through, I think that's, people are going to appreciate that, you know? And, so I think those are going to be the brands or the advertising, the commercials that probably win.
How do you make people laugh?
Yeah, exactly.
That always works.
Yeah.
No, but I do think like that
Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
The Norway ad is hilarious.
So that it is brilliant. That is brilliant. That will do very well. Yep. Yeah. I think though, to your point, the generosity is definitely a theme that you're kind of seeing in terms of, and I think some of it will land differently to other elements of it, but I do think that the brands are reading the room. It's just how well they're going to enter the room. Yeah. I think that's what I would say. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Very cool.
Laura, thanks so much. It's been a pleasure having you on. We've enjoyed it. And we look forward to this Super Bowl. It's going to be fun and interesting. I know you're going to be tuning in, probably taking notes. As you said earlier, you're going to be on Twitter. And I'm going to be on Twitter too. I can't wait to see. I'm just curious it's like the guy that, you know, unfortunately, as bad as it sounds, the person that drives by and kind of, you know, the guy that watches the car wreck on the side of the road, you know, it's like, you know, but everybody's curious, you know, this Robin Hood thing. So, you know, we'll certainly be tuning into that, but thanks so much for joining us and coming on and sharing a little insight. Can people find out more about what you do and some of the stuff that you've published?
I have some articles on the Huffington Post and DigiDay, and obviously I'm on LinkedIn. I mean, if people are interested in the field of like cultural insight or semiotics, you can kind of find out about what that is. And then obviously Ogilvy, for the work that we do and the brands we work with.
We've got a unique name. So you just Google Laura Tarbox. So you're not going to find too many other Laura Tarbox is on when you do a search. So
you're either going to get me or a car dealership in Boston, apparently. So, Well, thank you for having me.
All right, Laura, thanks so much. Okay, have a great weekend. Bye. Enjoy the Super Bowl. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. It's cool to kind of get that insight from somebody who works with a lot bigger brands and kind of getting that other side of it. But sounds like, I mean, she's definitely all for kind of the underdog, the small business, and this is their time. So taking advantage of that, I think, is important right now.
Americans root for underdogs. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
We root for underdogs.
Yeah, that's true. So who's your pick? I know we're going to talk on the next episode a little bit about some other Super Bowl stuff again. So, but I'm curious on like who's the underdog in this fight as far as on the field or on the pitch, as Laura would say.
My feeling is the underdog is probably Tampa Bay, and a lot of people, as much as people can't stand Tom Brady, to me, he's kind of an underdog. He's going on 44 years old, Sean. He's going to be close to our age, and he's out there slinging it. So I'm going to be rooting for that guy because I can.
I know, it's right. Like, if he had been with the Patriots, it'd be a no-brainer. He'd be rooting for the Chiefs all the way, right?
Yeah.
Even though they're in the same conference, I get that. So don't send hate mail that I don't know football. I'm just saying. But, yeah, because it's like, I was never a Tom Brady fan, but this year I kind of am, you know, because of what he's done with that team is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
You know, it because a lot of people, you know, for a long time thought, oh, it's Belichick or it's him and Belichick, the combination that make, but then he goes down to Tampa and just like crushes it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
So how do you hate a guy like that? I mean, who just performs. I mean,
it puts his whole career in a whole new perspective though, you know? Like it elevates his entire career. The fact that he can come in 1 year and go to the Super Bowl with kind of a, you know, an average, average team.
Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing. Yeah, of course he had a little help from Gronkowski and things like that. And their coach is no slouch by any means.
No, he's great. But he's, I remember reading, I was reading an article earlier today, a quote from Tampa Bay's coach. What is his name? It escapes me off the top of my head, but anyway, he said of all the quarterbacks he's ever coached, Tom Brady is the most prepared. He's not the most gifted. He just works to prepare, and he knows everything. By the time game day comes around, he is he's well prepared. I mean, he just studies. So,
yeah, and which makes it even more amazing because you know he's in he's playing teams that he hasn't played before throughout the season.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of times you get familiar with those teams and you learn them. And now, you know, so the fact that he did this is just pretty amazing.
Yeah,
especially like you said, at his age and new team and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. It's pretty
the
wild.
The last guy that made it to a Super Bowl at his age was Steve DeBerg with the Falcons when they went back in 1998.
Wow.
And he was 40, I think he was 43 years old, but he wasn't starting. He was actually backing up another guy, Chris Chandler, I think. So a little useless trivia there. So
there you go. All right. Well, we got another show coming up where we're going to dive into a little bit more Super Bowl stuff, but a little bit different angle.
Yeah. What Americans really love when it comes to Super Bowl, what are they really tuning into, or what are they? What are their favorite?
So this will be good context, this show that we just did. And then like, we'll be talking a lot about what's worked in the past and like, how is that going to, are those going to butt heads or is this still going to hold true?
Three things. Three things. America, animals, and something else. We'll just tease.
This is my beer. I should have saved this beer for that episode.
You should have. That would have been perfect.
Man, bad production there. My bad. So, all right. Well, I guess I'll let you wrap.
All right. Well, listen, thanks for listening. As always, you can find us persuasionbythepint.com. You want to tune in the next episode because the thing that I left out, man, it's something that's on the brain. So, so tune in for that. But you can find us on all of your podcast platforms, Stitcher Radio, iHeartRadio, all that stuff. Sean, it's been fun, man. We'll see you guys on the next episode.
See ya.